Hello, and welcome to The Supply Chain from Control Risks, the specialist risk consultancy. I'm your host, Sam Tornio, and in this series of podcasts, we'll be taking a closer look at the impact of COVID-19 on supply chains. Supply chain disruption means different things to different businesses, and even internally across different roles. To get a sense of these various perspectives, Charles Hecker, one of our partners, has been speaking with some of the people who have been right at the center of the crisis. People like Daniel Fombone, Senior Legal Counsel and Director of Global Compliance at Kinross Gold.
Sam, thank you very much, and a very big thanks and welcome to Daniel for joining us on the podcast and sharing some of your views and expertise with us. Daniel, of all of the aspects of supply chain risk and supply chain viability, whether it was before the pandemic, during the pandemic, or certainly in the aftermath following the pandemic, one of the most critical aspects is compliance. And we're really eager to hear your thoughts on managing compliance risk and how that's evolved as a result of the pandemic. So, Daniel, are there any new issues that have arisen as a result of the pandemic, or any old issues that have become more important in light of the pandemic?
I would say, Chuck, that many of the same issues are live, but their complexity has increased and the rapidity of how you have to address them has risen in pandemic times. So knowing who you're doing business with, being able to identify the key risks of a third party, and being able to respond to mitigate those risks, have always been issues that compliance has had to deal with in a supply chain process and paradigm. But certainly what we've seen in the last 2.5-3 months is we are being leaned on to come up with solutions and to identify risks at a quicker pace. We are now navigating third parties that are new to the fold. So, sourcing medical equipment, for instance, was not something that we did on a regular basis in the past. So we're dealing with new third parties. And we're also having to lean on different sources for goods and services because certain jurisdictions closed off their borders. Certain suppliers couldn't deliver some of the goods that we were previously sourcing from them. So all that to say that I don't think necessarily that the issues that we faced are new, but they are definitely more complex and our ability to manage them has been tested.
So what I'm assuming then is that the guiding principles of onboarding third-party suppliers have by and large stayed the same. I mean, in the checklist of issues that you're looking at before you onboard a partner, have there been any additions or subtractions or modifications?
No, that's a valid assumption. There have been times, I will admit, that we've had to not necessarily skip some of the steps, but in the past where we would have maybe taken some kind of further steps to verify or validate some of the assumptions that we had made as part of that onboarding process, we've had to at times made a judgment call as to whether it was truly necessary because, we had to sign a contract or we had to source this particular type of goods. Or in the case of donations, we had to get, test kits or PPE to one of the jurisdictions we operate in. So the process remains the same, but certainly when under pressure, and I mean, it would be the same pre-pandemic times when there is a time crunch and you need to get something to one of your operations, you may have to, make some judgment calls and not necessarily check all the boxes that you necessarily want to in a perfect environment. I think we've been under more and more enhanced pressure to do so, I guess, in this kind of rapidly changing landscape. The only other, thing I would add would be in the past where we can, when we have a new supplier and we're sourcing like a new form of good, or it's again, it's a supplier we've never done business with, we often do site visits, or we try and do site visits, or we hire a third party to do some type of site visits to validate the quality of goods or of the services that we would be procuring. And obviously in the last 2.5 months, as borders have shut, there is an inability at times to do so. So perhaps that's, you know, one step in our process that we haven't been able to do to the same ability than in the past.
So given challenges like that, and the challenges that you've mentioned about the rapidity, the speed, and the complexity of some of the new partners that you're onboarding and the pressure the pandemic has put on you, I think all companies feel in the exact same position. And we've heard this from a lot of clients, that many of the issues that they dealt with prior to the pandemic have multiplied and accelerated.
Under the pandemic, and certainly as the pandemic recedes and businesses look to a new sort of normal. Tell us a little bit about this, the state of the art or best practice in compliance. And what do you see the outcome of all of this? Will you be working more efficiently? Will you have to grow your team? Will you have to automate? What does best practice look like in the challenges that you're facing now?
You hit the nail on the head on a couple of the points you just made. Obviously, having more resources, although, you know, that's difficult right now in this environment, but having more resources to tackle some of these issues and address them, not only at the back end, but at the front end is a best practice. And if we can do that as we move, you know, into a new normal, as we get into this more pandemic normal, I guess would be ideal. But, you know, I think one of the best practices I've certainly seen in terms of what we can do and what I've heard other kind of similar companies of our size are doing is embedding compliance at all parts of our processes, and not just at the back end, when, you know, not having compliance be just one step along the way of your supply chain or your procurement process, but really ensuring that the business knows what we're there for from the front end. And ensuring that all the parties and stakeholders are working together throughout our regular processes so that we don't have issues pop up at the back end. And as a result, we have to start at the sourcing process from the get-go. Or to give you a more concrete example, I guess it would be, you know, sourcing something and then coming to compliance at the back end saying, can you do due diligence or what's the state of the due diligence? And we only find out as we're about to sign the contract that there is a problem with this new third party, and then we have to restart the RFP, we have to restart a tender or find the goods from somewhere else. So that's really, I think, that's an important point. I mean, automation is important for a variety of factors, but I would say as well for transparency from my perspective, RFPs, tenders, sourcing anywhere in the world, private sector, public sector, there's inherent risk to it, especially when you're talking about a lot of money attached to it. And if you're unable to identify where processes aren't being followed because it's not automated or you have an inability to audit from the back end, you're going to have some slippage. You're going to have at times, unfortunately, some untoward behavior, and I think you're going to be more challenged in terms of finding out where that slippage is or where there is some manipulation. Whereas companies that have been able to kind of automate that entire process are able to really track from A to Z what they're doing and when something has gone wrong. It doesn't mean that things aren't going to go wrong, but at least you can easily identify where that is and learn from that and mitigate that risk on the next sourcing event. So I think a couple of points there. But yeah, I mean, you really spoke to it in terms of, you know, automation, extra resources. And I think you will have that, not just in the private sector, but I'm seeing it in the public sector. I mean, just where I live in Canada, it's coming out on a daily basis. The headlines are that the federal government, some of the goods that they've procured aren't actually what they wanted. And they're going to have to send back a lot of the PPE, a lot of the masks that they were supposed to get.
Yeah. Well, in fact, a lot of the things that you just said resonate enormously with what we hear from other clients. And what we're hearing is sort of, again, the state of the art of the business. And first of all, of course, the last thing you said, and that is that both companies and governments have unfortunately made some missteps in sourcing PPE. And, you know, there have been notable cases really all around the world of either receiving goods that didn't meet medical standards of the receiving country, or, you know, just receiving goods that were late or not appropriate in another way. We've heard about that a lot. But I really enjoyed listening to your comments about a sort of holistic compliance program that isn't done at the last minute, and that permeates the entire business process. You know, there was a time when compliance and the compliance department, if you will, was sort of seen as the business prevention department. And I think an enlightened compliance program is very much seen as a business facilitator, as a source of support, and as a way of protecting a company as it either expands its footprint or, you know, takes on new activities or you know, puts its toe in unfamiliar waters. You need compliance there to support you all the way through. And so it's interesting to hear your remarks about that as well. Daniel, before we let you off the hook completely, tell us a little bit about, you know, since the pandemic, and I'm assuming that you're working from home, you know, how has your role changed? You know, everything from just the type of work that you're doing day in and day out, how you're doing it. You know, has there been a real dramatic evolution, a dramatic change in what you do every day?
Definitely. And I think firstly, I'd have to praise my IT team, because while and I will speak to some of the changes I've had to deal with, we have somehow managed to pivot to business as usual as much as we can, I guess. And that's all credit to the IT support and the infrastructure that Kinross has put into place. But having said that, a lot of compliance is best done in the field, as we say. And by that, I mean a lot of the training and investigations that we used to do has had to be done remotely by video. So we've been doing video interviews. We've been doing a lot more of online training, which I know has been in high demand for a number of companies. And so that, you know, that obviously creates its fair share of challenges. It's not necessarily as effective, although I think we are learning as an organization, and I'm sure a lot of other compliance professionals are finding the same thing. We're learning how to adapt and actually what tools we can use, you know, by video conference that perhaps we couldn't use, you know, in person. So while there have been a number of challenges in pivoting to a more virtual world, I think there's also been some exciting developments and some new tools at our disposal. Having said that, you know, I still would prefer to travel and to be able to go see our operations and to work with the people hand in hand. And then the other thing I would add, Chuck, is I think it's the pandemic and the reality that we've all lived through in the last 3 months has also done a good job highlighting the gaps in terms of what a lot of companies have in terms of the technology and the automation we were just speaking about it, that is necessary and that we don't necessarily always have built. So coming back to supply chain and procurement, you know, not everything that we do as a company in all our jurisdiction is hosted on one single platform or it's hosted in one single shared site. And so at times when we worked with some of our teams in different regions, we've had to do a lot of emailing back and forth and pulling of manual documents, and at times had to request for things to be scanned, for instance. And I think what the lesson learned for us as an organization, I'm sure it'll be the same for a lot of other folks, is, you know, what will we build in the next 1, 2, 5 years to ensure that if we're ever put into the situation, or if this is our new normal, I guess, as well, we can, I guess, live and work seamlessly in this new environment so that it really is, I guess it is the same as if I hopped on a plane and was in on the other side of the world and could just be in front of that person or in front of those documents. And I think that's, so again, I think there've been, you know, I think the conclusion for me is challenging. Yeah. Yes. But actually great lessons learned and also some new solutions that we've created to adapt to the new situation that I think will stay with us post pandemic. And I think, you know, I think that's good, because I guess it underlines the positive aspects in what are, you know, darker days.
I can't agree more with what you've said about the human touch in compliance. And while compliance becomes aided and supported and accelerated by technology, the human touch, quite literally seeing a business, looking at its documentation and meeting its people, is absolutely critical. And it's great that you've learned a new way to overcome that. Daniel, I want to thank you for bringing a human touch to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Appreciate the time to speak with you guys.
That's all for this episode of The Supply Chain. Stay updated with new episodes of The Supply Chain by subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to check out our other podcasts as well. To follow all of Control Risk's analysis of the COVID-19 pandemic and to find out how we are helping clients build organizations that are secure, compliant, and resilient, visit controlrisk.com. See you next time.